Blog Talk Radio.
Fantasy sports and politics.
Get ready to rumble!
You wanna talk smack? You in the right place. So take a step back before I get all up in your face. I know you got your little views, you know I got mine. But there's like 50 other dudes holding on the phone line. Your voice will be heard, sir.
Next caller, please.
And if I don't concur, we can agree to disagree.
We're talking fantasy sports and politics.
Gentlemen, it's Mr. FSP, doing a Duke of the Duke for you all day, every day. Bada bing, bada bang, bada boom. It's the realest G in the room. How you doing? Now check this out. It's Saturday. It's that much closer to NFL football and college football. There were some basketball moves that took place early this morning, late last night, but everything's going to be all right. You know why? Because I'm going to tell my co-host Jerry, sit down, be humble. Sit down, be humble. But that's my main man, JT ATM Money. Sound like he's smacking on a bowl of Cheerios or something. What's going on, JT?
What's happening, man? How you feeling? How you feeling?
I'm feeling like a six figure. That's
boy.
What I'm feeling like.
Really? Really? Really?
That's what I'm feeling like.
It'd be a lot like better if you were actually on a mic versus what you're on now.
Hey, look, first of all, you know why I'm not on a mic.
I know why you're not on a mic.
Why are you going to put me out there like that?
I'm not putting you out there. I'm just saying, you take little baby steps here, man. It's just like, you know, when you were on the other side of the ocean, you had all kinds of issues, yawning, not showing up, not being able to carry a conversation because every other word was not there. Now you get back into this heartland, and you still got issues. I'm going to call you Mr. Issues, not Victor. I'm going to call you Issues.
Ladies and gentlemen, these people I got to work with every day, do you see why Mike and Mike are breaking up? This is what happens when Mike and Mike broke up. You know, Golic over there just can't seem to handle it. You know, Greenberg, that's me.
Hey, you know what Mike Singletary says, right? Oh, no, no.
Need winners.
No. Yeah, that and also, you know what Jack Nicholson said, right?
No, what does Jack Nicholson say?
You can't handle the truth.
Oh, my goodness. At any rate. Welcome to the show, ladies and gentlemen. I am your host, Mr. FSP to you, along
Unfortunately.
With... Really? Really? You throwing shade? Okay. Mr. FSP to you, along with the heroin-addicted JT.
What? Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? Of all things to say, you had to go there? Oh,
well,
God. You are, you know, wow.
A piece of work.
Wow. A poor piece of work. Let me put it that way. A poor piece of work. How's that?
Oh, wow. Well, you started throwing shade.
I didn't throw needles like that, man. Come on, wow.
Oh, pun on words, needles.
Yes, exactly.
All right. Anyway, we're here to entertain you as well as inform you.
I think we've been doing that already.
Yes. So it's time to get to the informing part.
Well, let me talk then. Let me talk then.
You know what? See, I think you done took your shot. You got the needle and you got your wrist all chopped up. You're
wow.
Acting like you're on it. Okay.
You left yourself wide open when you said that. But go ahead. Go ahead. I'm sorry, man. I mean to interrupt you, but go ahead.
You are such a. I'm going to hurt you. Okay. So here's
go
the
ahead,
deal.
Man. Yeah.
Here's the deal. Before I jump into all over the place, I want to make this one point. This one point, and then we're going straight to the NFL.
Okay.
Well, two points, actually.
Okay.
The first
it's your show. You can make as many points as you like, man.
As I stated before, I think the Jacksonville Jaguars are slated for a extremely good year this year. And one reason that I forgot to mention, and apparently was not last week because the show went off air or lost audio or whatever, Calais Campbell is added to that Jacksonville Jaguar defense.
Okay.
Which already had a very solid front four. Now, you know what? Just because you're running the board. Calais Campbell. And that
remember,
front
I can
four,
mute you too.
I know you can, which is that's why I said you're on that stuff. So,
but I don't mute. But I don't
seven,
mute.
You just boo and interrupt.
You know why I don't mute? Because I like people to keep on talking and make a fool out of themselves all by themselves. So go
like
right ahead,
doing
man.
Right now, as I'm trying
hey.
To
go right ahead, man.
Okay, so Calais Campbell and that front seven are going to make the back four of the Jacksonville Jaguars that much more potent. I know they're young in the secondary, but that front four, and coupled with the rookies and free agents that they got, it's going to be a very, very good season.
You can't stay
Jaguars
away from the AFC South. AFC South.
Listen, I just wanted to point that out. That's all.
Yeah,
I want to
well,
do on that.
It looks good on paper.
It looks good on paper, and it will look good in a couple of months. But let's move forward to tonight. Tonight, Manny Pacquiao defends his title, and he's going to go to Australia for the first time. But the main thing here that I want to talk about real quick was what Freddie Roach said. Freddie Roach said that Pac dominant in this fight and wins. Because he wants to fight Floyd Mayweather again.
That ain't happening.
Said,
that's not happening. Well, come on. Be realistic. Be realistic.
Oh, my goodness. And says that he needs this. So with that being said.
You said he needs it?
You know,
is that what you're telling me?
That Freddie Roach said that he needs this. And he needs to look dominant in defending his title to get a shot back at Floyd.
That ain't happening.
Now, let me finish. So Freddie Roach believes that I think 36, 37-year-old Pac, if I'm not mistaken, maybe even 38, has one more shot at Floyd. Most people, and I'm one of them, but I'm hoping, but most people believe that Floyd is going to totally outclass, outbox, and just destroy and pick apart Conor McGregor.
I
believe that he might be able to do that, but he should knock McGregor out. He should knock him out just to prove a point. You know,
doesn't make a difference.
Rounds,
Go
10 rounds with a mixed martial artist, and to me, again, that shows disrespect to other boxers that have gone 10 rounds.
Any way you can possibly go, any route you want to go, you know, that's just like, and I'll make this analogy. Maybe it's a poor analogy, but I'll put it like this. Our friend Mac is a diehard, in quotation marks, independent, but we know better.
yeah.
but if the political party starts with a D, he's totally against it. Even if they got a better plan, he's totally against it. Okay. No matter what a Democrat has to say, Mac's going to disagree with it. Spin it so it's it's on a negative light. And the analogy I'm putting is that no matter which way Floyd Mayweather wins, you're going to put a negative light on it because how you feel about Floyd Mayweather. Yes, Vanessa.
No,
I mean,
the only way,
come on.
Listen.
Come on,
the
Victor.
Only way I would, listen,
come on, Victor.
I'm telling you, the only way I would put a negative connotation on a Floyd Mayweather victory over Conor McGregor is if he takes him 10 rounds.
Why?
Now he beats him
Why?
Up.
Listen, Why?
Listen.
Why? Because, wait a minute. Conor McGregor is a world class athlete, just like Floyd Mayweather. Two different sports. Wait a minute.
Not like Floyd Mayweather.
Two different sports, but they're world class athletes, champions in their own right, in their own sport, going against each other. Now I understand that Floyd's undefeated. Conor McGregor quite naturally isn't, especially in this is his first really venue into boxing. But there's nothing to say there's a guarantee that Floyd Mayweather is going to knock him out somewhere between the first and last round of this fight. Because Floyd is a point getter. He's not a knockout artist. He's a he accumulates points. He accumulates points. And so if you knock them out or not, shouldn't make a difference. The mantra is this. In the words of the former Jets coach, you play to win the game.
Listen,
you don't play it just to play it. You play to win the game.
I understand that.
So regardless of how it's done, you play it to win it. It don't make a difference how you play it. You just want
to win. Yeah.
Exactly.
Listen, I get that. The problem is this, Jerry. The major problem with that is this. A point getter. Floyd has knocked people out in the past. Let's not pretend like he doesn't have any KOs.
It's been a long time. It's been a long time. It's been a long time.
It doesn't matter.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does.
Listen, he's got grown man strength now. Grown man strength versus that young pup strength. So that means he should be stronger, and he is. He is stronger, and he is bigger. So there, it should not matter. Now, the point of why he should knock him out is because what Conor McGregor is, and you said it, a world-class athlete. However, Conor is not a boxer in any way, shape, or form. He's able to box. He's able to fight, yes. But the problem here is Floyd's getting the money grab. So is Conor. We got it. And if you're going to put on a show, put on a show. Mike Tyson said, you know what, I'm going to go in there, make my money as quick as possible.
Different type of fight. Different type of fighter altogether, man.
Listen,
no, you can't even compare it. That's apples and oranges. You can't even go there.
I'm trying to show you something. I'm trying to show you something.
That's the wrong one to show me.
If you be quiet and listen, I know listening is a difficult part for a Gemini.
I'm listening.
But,
go ahead.
But James Toney, again, world-class athlete, heavyweight champion, light heavyweight champion as well, thought he could go into mixed martial arts and take on their champion, Randy Couture, signed the contract, started training MMA for a couple of months or whatever the case may be, got in there, tried to box with Couture. Couture took him down and finished him, made him quit, tapped him out. When you go into somebody else's realm, you don't let that person survive. You make that person pay for coming into your realm. Now, when you have Floyd Mayweather, who is the professed, and a lot of people think this, the king of boxing, you don't let another king in his own right, Conor McGregor, come into your kingdom and play around and start getting support. And because you know, especially in Vegas, the Irish are going to be there. If you've ever seen an MMA fight with Conor McGregor going in Brazil, of all places, the Irish followed him. So, and they fuel him. They fuel him with the chants. They fuel him with everything. So when you go, into that boxing ring, Floyd Mayweather needs to do more than just silence Conor McGregor. He needs to silence the Irish. They're going to be rooting for Conor McGregor. So in order to do that, he's got to put this man on his back for the 10 count. Now, if Floyd beats him up for 10 rounds and the ref decides to stop it, or Conor just looks totally jacked up, I might give him some credit. However, if he goes 10 rounds with Conor McGregor and leaves it to the judges and gives maybe one or two rounds or whatever it is to Conor, I'm not going to have any respect for him. This needs to be.
Oh, God. You don't have respect for him anyway, man. 100. He could care less.
This needs to be a 100 to 90 type score.
Okay.
You know, if it's 10 rounds, 100 to 80.
Okay.
It needs to be 100 to 80. Every
let me know when I can speak.
I will.
Let me know when I can speak.
Every round should be a 10-8 round for Floyd Mayweather if he's going to go the full 10. Because you don't let someone step into your arena and look any type of way other than below par. Especially when they've been calling you out. Especially when they've been saying this, that, and the third. I know Floyd's in it for the money. Everybody knows that. But regardless of how long the fight is, Floyd makes that money. So does McGregor. So finish the night in 3 rounds or so and let everybody go home saying, well, I knew it. I didn't expect him to knock him out, but he did. That's the awe factor for people that want to buy this fight. Seeing if Floyd will knock this guy out. Because otherwise, it's a mismatch of epic proportions. The fantasy is that he knocks McGregor out. Or my alternate fantasy is that McGregor wins this fight by hook or by crook or any way, by all means necessary. That's my ultimate fantasy. But
that's obviously showing your bias away from towards Floyd, which is, you know, it's obvious. Listen to what you just said. Your ultimate fantasy would be to Conor McGregor to win it. Come on. Now, you don't tell me that's an obvious bias toward Floyd Mayweather, because of all the times you've talked about Floyd Mayweather on this show and others. Come on, Victor.
But, Jay,
I've already said
that Floyd's going to win this fight. Floyd.
But you premise it as being my ultimate fantasy. I mean, that means your ultimate get off would be to get Floyd on the losing end of this fight. Because
that would make my day.
Obviously. There it is. There it is. The obvious bias comes out, but that's okay. That's all right. You know what this reminds me of? Can I get my chance to talk here? And it's going to be relatively short. This shows me. This reminds me of two people, and once I name these two people, you'll know what I'm talking about. Samuel Jackson and Jeff Goldblum.
No, I don't recall what you're talking about.
How about the movie called The Great White Hype, when the Irish boxer was so hyped up by all the media wanting to see the champion lose that they absolutely pumped the Irish boxer up. All the Irish, just like you're saying, all the Irish come out and support him. This is the guy that's going to take this big, bad champion that no one really likes but has to deal with because he's so good. That's what you're saying. That's exactly the type of scenario I hear you talking about.
I know
what you're saying. He needs to knock him out. But I guarantee you, two things. Floyd Mayweather goes into the fight to win the fight, number one. Number two, if there's an opportunity and he can do it, he will knock him out. And I'll add a third one here. But if there's not an opportunity to knock him out, he'll humiliate him from round one until the last round, which just makes it so obvious that this guy shouldn't have been in the ring to really humiliate him and make him look that bad that he's totally outclassed from start to finish. Those are three different scenarios that that Floyd's going to go into the fight. Win the fight is number one. Number two, opportunity to knock him out, I want to knock him out. Number three, well, if I can't knock him out, how about the ideal thing for me to do, me being Floyd, is to humiliate him for 10 rounds or 12 rounds, whatever it is, to make him look like you shouldn't have even been here in the first place. But I'm gonna let you hang around for 12 rounds and make you look bad for 12 rounds because I want to show people how good I am and how bad this fight should have been, but I'm going home with my money. Thank you very much. And tying Rocky Marciano in the process.
Okay.
And we have Jeff on the line, too. Hello, Jeff.
Okay,
how you doing?
We can put Jeff on. Did you mute
what's
me?
What's up, guys? Now, the movie that Jerry's talking about, The Great White Hype, I think one of the jokes was the actor who they were calling. Hold on, I'm going to look this up. It was Peter Berg, I think is the name of the actor.
Yes.
And he
was
the white contender. And
yep.
They called him something like, Irish Billy something. And at least twice he said, I'm not Irish. Like he said, to the side to somebody.
Mm-hmm.
But it just goes to show you how that works in boxing. And, that was an interesting film. It had its moments. He was probably based on more than one character, but I was just mm-hmm. thinking of this. I don't know why. Damon Wayans was the champ,
yep.
And he had he really
Nobody
let himself
him.
Go in between fights, and it reminded me of I still don't get it to this day. Buster Douglas, who won the heavyweight title, but acted like he won the pick six.
Yep.
You know. And
yep.
There was a sports writer in that movie who reminded me of a guy who wrote for one of the New York papers. That was the Jeff Goldblum character.
Mm-hmm.
But it the whole thing about I swear I'm not joking. I'm a quarter Irish on my mom's side.
Okay.
Irish
mm-hmm.
Jew. There's not a lot
okay.
of us. But, surprisingly, in more so Northern Ireland, they're known for a lot of religious conflict, but they're tolerant. They have a history of tolerance of Jewish people. I guess when you're a very small group, you don't get as much hatred if you're very small, mm-hmm. And the city of Dublin has elected two Jewish mayors, so that
really?
Speaks a lot for those people. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Really?
Briscoe. Ben and Bob Briscoe, a father and son, both were elected
wow.
as mayor of Dublin. Yeah.
Did not know that.
Okay,
yeah.
Gentlemen.
But the thing is, to me, this whole McGregor, Mayweather thing, Eminem, whatever you want to call it, it reeks. It's a farce.
I agree.
You know, I mean, I used to watch a lot of boxing. I kind of lost interest in that sport. I try to like MMA. It doesn't do it for me,
Thank you, Jeff.
When I was a kid, everybody kept saying, because at that point, in the 80s, everybody was saying, oh, boxing's going to fade away. And I think some people thought maybe, what I call wrestling, professional wrestling, would take its place, which did not happen. Maybe they took a little bit away, but it was MMA, which has taken a big piece of the action away from boxing. But MMA doesn't throw me. And, you know, say what you want about wrestling. At least when you pay for a wrestling pay-per-view, they give you a good show. Yeah, it's a show, but it's good. It's not some, 60-second joke. And, you know, just logically, the idea, even if you remove the names from it, you know, if you put a boxing champion against an MMA champion, it's, you know, what's the analogy? It's like a swimmer against a sprinter, you know?
Yep.
And at most, it's an exhibition. And believe me, if you're going to – but like okay, and this is somewhat similar. When I was a kid, and believe me, all the kids are talking about it, Muhammad Ali had an exhibition against a Japanese wrestling champion, professional wrestling champion, Antonio Inoki.
Antonio Inoki. Mm-hmm.
Yes. And supposedly that – was the inspiration for in Rocky III when Rocky had the inspiration against the exhibition against Thunderlips played by Hulk Hogan.
Mm-hmm.
And the fans at it was, I think the match took place in Japan. They were very unhappy because, you know, they came up with these hybrid rules. So basically something like Inoki can only kick if he's on his back. So he's like running around on his back, sitting down in the ring. Ali's running from him, and he's just kicking Ali. That was basically the whole thing. It was pretty weak. If you were going to have this as – I mean, just the fact that it's a boxing match. I used to eat lunch at work years ago with a guy who had been taking I think it was Korean karate for many years. And somebody once said to him, "Hey, you should try boxing. You know, white boxers have it real easy." Somebody said something like that to him, and he said, "You know, I've been doing this karate for so long, it'd be almost impossible to switch, you know, from, you know, I guess punch-kick combinations to just punch combinations, et cetera, et cetera." And that sounds very, very accurate to me. I mean, if you were going to have this as a fair fight, you would need some type of hybrid rules. You know what I mean? Allow some kicks or something to that effect. But, you know, if it's total boxing rules, you know, McGregor doesn't have a chance. And, you know, I mean, Mayweather, you know, yeah, he's great at boxing, but he's even better at making a buck. And this is a joke that people are going to pay for this nonsense. Believe me, if it's on TV, I'd watch it. But it's one of those things, even if you have the money, it's still money. You know, you don't want to be ripped off. You don't want to be robbed, you know. You don't want to encourage deception and thievery, or, you know. I wouldn't say thief, but it is somewhat deceiving. This is a farce. I mean, this is slightly better than Chuck Wepner fighting a bear. You know, I mean, come on. It's just a little more politically correct. I don't get it. It's barely worth the discussion.
Really, real quick, Jerry, I'm gonna call right back. I gotta take care of something. But y'all continue to talk about this for a few minutes. Set the show for an hour and a half, so we can get into the different teams. But I'll be right back in like 5 or 10 minutes. I gotta hang up and do something else.
Okay. Thanks.
All right.
Thanks, Victor. God. You're absolutely right, Jeff. And I had mentioned to someone else about a week ago, and for whatever reason it came up, that I'm not going to even think about this, other than just what came up today about this fight, because I considered a huge joke. And that they would actually put this out as a, in quotation marks, a legit fight, that someone from a different sport altogether that really doesn't even admit, even though he does have a little bit of boxing in it, it's not like he's that's his dominant part of the sport that he's in MMA. going up against a undefeated world champion that probably the best boxer pound for pound right now, even though he's retired. And call a legit fight and make it a pay-per-view fight. And people are going to actually fall for the okie doke and pay for this fight to watch it. I mean, I made the comment, I think last week or to someone, I forget who I made it. I made it in a chat room couple weeks ago. There's a sucker born every minute. If you make a product, a widget, say it, so to speak, that seems like it makes a lot of sense, but it's just a bunch of garbage, like a lot of things you see advertised on TV, people will buy it. And regardless of if it works or not, it gets bought, and the buyer gets suckered into something that, if they had thought about it, instead of just buying it and saying, "Oh, that sounds like a good idea," like this fight, then they would realize, "I'm not going to pay for this. This is garbage. Why would I even think about a MMA fighter?" Or the fact is that they want to see another opportunity of an unpopular fighter in a lot of people's circles, of Floyd Mayweather getting beat. So they want to be able to say they watched it and saw that Conor McGregor beat Floyd Mayweather, and now Floyd Mayweather, according to some people, can go away because now he's no longer undefeated. He's 49-1 instead of 50-0. What's your thoughts, Jeff?
You know, I agree with what you said. I mean, it's a farce. And you know what? I think this might attract some casual fans. And believe me, I think a lot of these casual fans will be disappointed, similar to the Mayweather-Pacquiao bout, because, you know, some folks think it's going to be like a Rocky movie where they come out and they're just throwing punches like crazy the whole fight. And believe me, that's not a Mayweather fight, you know?
Right, exactly.
This could be a boring farce.
Exactly.
I mean, Rocky movies are good, but the movies...
Am I back on?
Yeah, you're back on, man. Go, fire away.
Okay. Jeff, I love you, and I agree with you. That's why I think that he needs to knock him out, because you don't – it's a money grab. Got it. Both of them want money. But as I was telling Jerry, this needs to be over with quickly, because just like when James Toney did the MMA fight with Randy Couture, you know, Randy Couture – didn't waste any time. He got in there, did his job, tapped him out, game over, James Toney, done MMA, whatever. No three rounds, no five rounds, just in there, finish it in the first round. Done and done. That's what needs to happen in this case, in my opinion. Now, will it? I don't know. But the bottom line is, Floyd Mayweather should mop the floor with him. And for me, as a combatives fan or a combat sports fan, if someone steps into my arena of sport and keeps calling me out, keeps saying they're going to do this, that, and the third to me, I'm going to put them out. I'm going to put them out and silence it from the get-go. I'm not going to let him play around in there or whatever and think he can stand in with me, because it's an insult to all those that have done so, that are professional boxers. That is my thought process. That's all I wanted to say on that, so we can move forward to football, which we're getting into. So, if Jerry cues up my music, the Autumn Wind, if you play, the Bull, we can get to football as we normally do. And he does it right about now.
Relax, man. My screen's froze up. So just to keep on talking.
So now we're talking about malfunctions with equipment. Is that what we're talking about? You're always talking about my microphone. Always talking about my microphone.
The microphone is on. Am I right? We're talking, right? You can hear me, right? So that's not the issue.
I can't hear the bull, which should be easy. Just hit it, play, and turn it up. All right. Well, he'll let me know when it's coming up. But today we're going to talk about the AFC North. Now, if you listen to Thursday's show, Jerry and I were talking about something that was very important, strength of schedule. And it looks like the AFC West, well, it doesn't look like, the AFC West has the hardest strength of schedule, 1, 2, 3, and 4. Conversely, the AFC North has one of the weaker ones. They have a 24, 29, 21, and let me get to the next team to tell you what their strength of schedule is. Steelers should be pretty high, I would think, but I guess they aren't.
Steelers have one of the weaker schedules.
Yeah, that's what, and I'm getting to that. Yeah, that's kind of. That shouldn't be the case, but they have the tie for 27. The weakest one in the division is the Browns with 29, which is interesting to me. The Browns actually, after looking at their roster, no, they have 21st. The Bengals have the 29th toughest schedule, which is surprising. But the Browns should be vastly improved if they can figure out the quarterback situation. That good old Brock Osweiler from the Texans. Well, we know how that worked out and all the hype somebody gave him. But the Bulls should be playing right about now. No Bull? Can I get lemonade? Can I get something?
Got lemonade.
All right, I got lemonade. I got lemonade. What's up with the Bull then? All right, here's the deal. We're going to start off with the Baltimore Ravens. The NFL team inside the field keep asking questions, and to me, Jerry and Jeff, the Ravens are going to be a pass-only team. I'll tell you why in a second. Which wide receiver benefits the most or will emerge following Steve Smith Sr.'s retirement? The Ravens want to see what they had this year in 2015 first-round pick, Breshad Perriman. He showed flashes last season in what was essentially his rookie year after missing all of 2015 with a knee injury. However, he struggled to make contested catches, and he has a ways to go with his route runs. With both Smith and Kamar Aiken gone, Perriman figures to get more snaps. Here's why I say the Ravens are going to be primarily a pass-only team. Is Danny Woodhead the only Raven running back who will have any fantasy relevance this season? What's the plan for Kenneth Dixon following his four-game suspension? I said last year that I'd avoid Ravens running backs, and I'd say the same this year. Terrence West will likely carry the load early. Woodhead is expected to be the third down back, and he'll also mix in on early downs. He should assume the Kyle Joyziak role in the passing game. Dixon seemed poised to become the feature back last year, with him facing the four-game ban and then needing to knock off the rust once he comes back. I can't imagine he'll be a fantasy factor until midseason. Dennis Pitta was a top-10 fantasy tight end last season after playing a total of 7 games in 2013 and 15 combined. Can he be that again? I wouldn't bet on it. The Ravens tight end core was hit hard by injuries and suspensions last season, with Benjamin Watson missing the whole year, Max Williams and Crockett Gilmore missing a significant part of it, and both Nick Boyle and Darren Waller serving suspensions. All of them are back, which should cut into Pitta's targets. The Ravens also want Joe Flacco taking more shots down the field. Now, last year's stats aren't that bad, but They ran the ball with their main backs, that is, a total of 291 times. 193 for West, 88 for Dixon. The addition of Danny Woodhead tells me, if I'm paying Danny Woodhead that much money, and I don't have that confidence in Terrence West, who lost the job to Dixon last year, and Dixon's on a 4-game suspension at the beginning of the year. Flacco is going down the field, coupled with the fact that they want him to go downfield more. Mike Wallace is a speed burner, so you know he's got nines. So is Breshad Perryman. One of them is going to have to start doing some underneath routes. Chris Moore and Michael Campanaro are the other wide receivers. Ben Watson comes in with Dennis Pitt as the starting tight ends. The best fantasy value on this team for me would be Justin Tucker. I'm not even looking at their defense. Now, they drafted defensive heavy. They only got two offensive players this year, but the first pick was cornerback, 6 foot, Marlon Humphrey out of Alabama. Followed that with outside linebacker Tyus Bowser out of Houston, who's a very talented backer. Then they went Chris Wormley at DN out of Michigan. Another good player. Not a beast, but a very good player. Listen, these teams are, or this team has the 24th ranked strength of schedule. Okay? I still don't think they're good enough to make the playoffs, even with the 24th easiest schedule or hardest schedule. I'm not a big Flacco fan. Without Ray Rice in that backfield, they struggle to have a dual threat back in one person. The Ravens, to me, are they're in a rebuilding stage, and they need to begin right now. This year will be a dismal one for them. I'll go down the schedule in a second, but let me get your thoughts on what I read, JT and Jeff.
I've never been a big Ravens fan and or a Joe Flacco fan. I think their offense, in my opinion, is pretty dysfunctional. And I do agree with you that ever since they lost Ray Rice, they haven't really had an effective running game, and relied on the pass, and for the most part relied on the short passing game. That's why it was important for Dennis Pitta last year. I think he was probably the if he wasn't first, he was second in receptions last year.
For the team. Yeah.
Yes. And he was first. Yeah, I thought he was first, but I wasn't sure. That's why I premised it about first or second, because that's what Joe Flacco likes to do. Joe Flacco likes to throw to the tight end. And the fact is that it's limited on his ability to accurately throw the ball downfield. Never been a big Mike Wallace fan. I think he's a one-trick pony. That trick is not more of a bad trick than a good trick. I think he's a legend in his own mind, to tell you the truth. And would never, ever put him on any of my teams in fantasy, because he's just not all that for me. He's too much of a boom or bust guy, and more bust than boom. I don't, even though they have the 24th weakest schedule to deal with this year, I think it coincides with the type of team they are, that they're going to struggle, even though they're the 24th. They have the 24th weakest schedule, or the 12th, 11th weakest schedule, if you go from the bottom up, then they are still going to struggle, because their defense is suspect at best, and their offense is the same. I don't have high hopes for the Baltimore Ravens at all.
Jeff?
Yeah, in terms of fantasy – the Ravens offense doesn't thrill me. I mean, you know, nothing against Joe Flacco, but he's never been a top tier fantasy quarterback. I used to think he was a pretty good QB too, and a lot of the other guys on that offense, you know, are mostly relevant in deeper leagues. You know, if Woodhead is healthy, you know, he's good in a PPR league. I don't think I'd bother with him in non-PPR. You know, when you got three, maybe four running backs in the mix, I hate that, you know. And, you know, Mike Wallace, Jerry's correct, is a one-trick pony. And that trick doesn't always work because if, it, you know, he pulls a hamstring, he's useless, you know. I mean, most guys are, but he's really useless. You know, so, but, you know, the thing is, and this is why you got to pay attention, somebody could emerge. Somebody, you know, through just impressing the coaches in camp or through injuries to other guys, that's why, you know, you got to keep an eye on it. Somebody, you know, could emerge, and, you know, that if you could get, you know, a real sleeper late in the draft, that is just incredibly valuable to your fantasy team.
All right. And Danny Woodhead does have a little value, but, you know, I don't think Danny Woodhead is the – listen, that just tells me you're going to throw. There's going to be a lot of screens. And
he's coming off an ACL.
Yeah, and coming off ACL. So 1 year removed. I don't think he's anywhere near the caliber of Jamaal Charles or anybody like that that had that type of injury and come back and played the way they played. I mean, the guy's a good player. Don't get me wrong. I don't think he's that good of a player. But let's go over the schedule real quick, and we'll give our predictions at the end. They open up the season at Cincinnati. Then they host Cleveland at Jacksonville in London. I'm telling you, Jacksonville is going to become the London expansion team. Then they host Pittsburgh at Oakland, Chicago at Minnesota, Thursday night for Miami, at Tennessee. Then week 10, they have a bye. Okay? Week 10, they have a bye. Then week 11, at Green Bay, home for Houston Monday night, home for Detroit, at Pittsburgh, at Cleveland, home for Indy, and home for Tennessee. That last half after the bye week, that is a murderer's row, in my opinion. I don't think Cleveland might even upset them on week 15, December 17th. I honestly think Cleveland might beat them in that week. And they could finish the season 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, with 7 straight losses. I really think so. But I'm not going to predict that. I'm going to say, wow, that's going to be 6. They're probably going to go maybe 8, 7, and 9. I really think so. 8, 7, and 9. What you got, JT?
Same. I can't disagree. There's nothing that I see that can push me for him to get any more wins than 8, and it easily could go the other way. So I'm going right with what you're saying, 8, 7, and 9. That's exactly what I was thinking before you even put it out there, 8, 7, and 9.
Jeffrey.
Oh.
Not Jeffrey, it's Jeff.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
Thanks, Jerry. You see, because my legal name's Jeff, and Jerry's legal name is Jerry, so we have that in common.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You
so
know what?
We bond
name.
Over that. So, you know, I'm not good at picking number of wins. I mean, this looks like Ravens are middle of the pack, maybe a little below the pack, you know, 7 and 9 maybe. I'll tell you, though, with the strength of schedule, occasionally teams get lucky because it's not just who you play, it's when you play them.
Exactly.
And once in a while, it doesn't have, you can't rely on it, but, you know, when key guys are out and then you're playing them, you catch a break. And this is something that's increased in recent years, and I hate it, that sometimes – I don't know. I hate this. Divisional games, sometimes there'll be two teams. There'll be a team playing the opponent like twice in like 2 or 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was like a couple years ago, Giants played the Redskins like I think twice in 3 weeks. And I'm just as a fan, I'm like, we just played those guys. And one of the many things I don't like about it is the whole timing thing, because if a key player's out, the opposing team can miss out on that twice. So I think, you know, let's say there should be some kind of rule for, you know, divisional games, which are very important, of course. You know, let's say you play them once in the first half of the season, once in the second half, and always at least 4 weeks in between. I mean, that's a common sense thing to me.
Hey, let me just throw this little tidbit out there to give it to you. Of the 10 easiest schedules in 2016, 7 teams made the playoffs: Patriots, Seahawks, Dolphins, Cowboys, Lions, Falcons, and Giants. Another finished with a winning record of 9-7, which was the Titans, and the others, Bills and Cardinals, won 7 games. So strength of schedule does make a difference. It doesn't ensure that you're going to get in the playoffs, but it helps to give you a leg up, that another leg up in getting in the playoffs. I don't think this pertains to Baltimore, but I just had to put that out there.
Okay. Well, let's move on to a team that I think will actually be close in the record department to Baltimore. That's the Cleveland Browns. Hit me off with some lemonade or what else we got there?
Just go ahead, man. I'll get you. Just go ahead.
That's my partner in crime.
Here we go.
All
here
right,
we go.
Here we go.
I got something for you.
Okay, Maria, Maria. I love you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, the Cleveland Browns, an NFL team inside of Fields, keep asking questions through Athlon's magazine. Is Isaiah Crowell clearly ahead of Duke Johnson on the running back depth chart? Can Crowell get enough touches to be an RB2 this season? Crowell is clearly the lead back, and with the team's uncertain quarterback situation and offensive line upgrades, he's in line for the most productive season of his career. Crowell flashed speed and confidence during the 2016 season and had the Browns focus more on running the ball or been closer in more games. He might have been a 1,500-yard back. This year, the plan is to feed him the ball and let him work behind a healthy and beefed-up offensive line. Crowell averaged a career-high 4.8 yards per carry in 2016. The Browns truly believe he can be a top-flight back. Johnson will get touches and catch passes out of the backfield, but Crowell is the Browns' back to draft in your fantasy league and could be a sneaky producer. What are your expectations for rookie tight end David
Njoku?
Yeah, I just said it. The Browns releasing veteran tight end Gary Barnage after they drafted Njoku in a strong sign they plan to keep Njoku busy. Though he's got some learning and growing to do, Njoku is a big target and has enough athletic ability to run after the catch and make defenders miss. He just turned 21 in July and was not a full-time starter in college, but the Browns plan to let him learn while playing and figure to throw some screen passes to get him involved. If he starts catching passes down the seam, he could put up big numbers, especially late in games if the Browns are trailing and facing prevent defenses. He could be a really productive yet under-the-radar tight end to target in a draft. Now, I agree with that. I totally agree with that. Listen, Crowell in one of my leagues actually helped me get to the championship. Ultimately, I didn't win the championship with him as my starting running back, but I do believe he's a good player. And Njoku is a very talented tight end. The problem is, we can look at, you know, Terrell Pryor's done. Okay, Corey Coleman, Andrew Hawkins then steps up as their starting wide receivers, and Kenny Britt. I apologize. Corey Coleman and Kenny Britt step up as their starting wide receivers. You know, they have a rookie kicker in Zane Gonzalez. The problem I see with Cleveland, it's not the defense, because look what it did. In the draft, they went DN, safety, tight end, quarterback, defensive tackle, cornerback, offensive tackle, defensive tackle, bigger running back. So Myles Garrett has been said to be looking really good. And you couple him with Jabril Peppers? Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. I really don't like Myles Garrett by himself. He reminds me of Courtney Brown, another Cleveland Brown that was drafted ahead of Warren Sapp. But you put him on the same side as a and you can move Peppers down the block. You can keep Peppers in the back. He's a hybrid. We call him a jackal. He can play safety or linebacker, just like my dude out of Seattle. Can't remember his name, Cam Cameron. So you have to worry about him coming down and blitzing or Myles Garrett. Now, Danny, I can't remember Danny's last name, but the defensive tackle out of Washington that plays with the Browns got drafted a couple years ago. This is an opportunity for him to step up and become that beast on that defensive line along with Garrett. So defense isn't a problem. You know, DeShone Kizer has a great opportunity to take the job from Brock Osweiler. Let's face it. If Osweiler's on that roster by the time preseason starts, he's the starting quarterback. Why? Because they're paying him too much money. Too much money. But I don't think he has what it takes to be the starting quarterback in the NFL. But you got Cody Kessler as well there, who's, I guess, projected to be the starting quarterback off of sheer talent alone. But money dictates that you start Osweiler or you release him. Now, Cleveland has the 21st toughest schedule, which is rather weak. It's not middle of the pack, but it's not that tough either. But from what I just said, gentlemen, let me know what you got to say. Jazz.
Isaiah Crowell is a good example of frequently in fantasy football, it's not just the player's talent, it's the situation. He's a good running back, but, you know, he's not Walter Payton, but, you know, he's going to be the guy in Cleveland, so he has
24 touches.
You know,
he's going to get the ball times pretty much a game.
Right. So he's definitely has value, but also you want to be realistic about that. I mean, I wouldn't be thrilled about him as a RB1, you know, too good, you know, flex, terrific. I also like David Njoku, who's one of many NFL tight ends from the University of Miami, and he's also from North Jersey, from Cedar Grove. Looks like an excellent athlete. Also seems like a mature, responsible young man, which sometimes is relevant because some of these rookies get in the doghouse or whatever, and he doesn't seem like that type of young man. You know, it's relevant sometimes, you know. Now, the thing is, I like Njoku a lot. I mean, as a player, as a prospect, and somebody, you know, when these so-called authorities comes up with this number about, you know, how productive rookie tight ends are, and as far as I'm concerned, you got to make that discussion to be first round rookie tight ends, because they're much more likely to become a big part of the offense. And, you know, really, as a tight end too, you know, I think I'd be very content with that in a lot of drafts, depending on where he goes. He's not going super high, because a lot, you know, even first round picks, a lot of rookie tight ends aren't that productive yet. Maybe he's going to bust out in his second year, third year. Hey, there's good tight ends who didn't break out till their fourth year, like another Jersey guy, Greg Olsen. Mm-hmm. It took Vernon Davis, I think, four seasons to really become a big-time producer. And then, you know, you got guys in Cleveland like Kenny Britt, who very quietly got 1,000 yards. I think he barely got 1,000 yards with the Rams, and it just goes to show you, 1,000 yards catches your eye. But basically, I mean, a receiver could average 60-something yards per game, and if you play all 16 games, you could still hit 1,000 yards. So, but, you know, a guy like Britt is probably good for your fourth wide receiver. And now sometimes, and I read this once, and I think it was pretty accurate information, and when Kevin Smith was running back for the last place, when the Lions were in last place, it was a good article, and it said that running backs on last place teams frequently don't have the greatest production. I mean, you know, yeah, they have good production, but not great, you know, because a lot of times they get behind, and then they start throwing to the wideouts a lot, and if the guy isn't a great receiver, then forget about it, you know. So that's another reason why you want to have, you know, reasonable expectations for Crowell.
All right.
Okay. Sure.
Well, I've said this. Jeff brought it up already. It's not who you play, it's when you play them. The first six games that the Cleveland Browns have. The second game of the season is against the Ravens in Baltimore, followed by a game against the Colts in Indianapolis. So this is a pretty rough beginning of the season. First game against the Steelers, at the Ravens, at the Colts, home against the Bengals. So first three, four out of games, they're the division rivals. Then they get a break, so to speak, against the Jets at home. And then they go on the road against another division rival and another division winner, against the Houston Texans. So, like I said, it's not who you play, it's when you play them. And they have three out of the first six games tough opponents on the road. I like the Cleveland Browns. I think, and I really love this coach. You guys know I really love Hugh Jackson. And the way that this organization has finally looked like they come to their senses and trying to build a solid roster, a core players to be able to compete in this division. If you look at the schedule, I know it's the 21st or whatever it is schedule, but if you look at the teams that they play and when they play them, oh my God, it's going to be a relatively rough season. I don't think they're going to go as bad as they went last year in the loss column. I mean, in the win and loss column. I think they gather three or four more wins because of who they play and when they play them. But I do like the direction that they're going in, and hopefully they straighten out who's going to be their starting quarterback and keep to that from start to finish. I like two players on the team. I like Kenny Britt a little bit, and I really like because this is the philosophy of the head coach slash offensive coordinator is Hugh Jackson. Hugh Jackson's going to run the football. That's his mantra. Everywhere he's gone, the running back has benefited from that. At least your running back has benefited from that, and I think Isaiah Crowell is going to benefit that. About that. But just like Jeff said, they're probably going to be playing from behind quite a bit, and they're going to have to put the ball in the air. Isaiah Crowell can catch the ball, but they also have and I forget the guy's name right off the top of my head, who's going to be catching the ball, the running back, change of pace
Duke
back.
Johnson?
Duke Johnson. Duke Johnson, yeah. I could remember. Yeah, Duke Johnson. So, but they do like to run the football, and also because of the quarterback situation, that the running back is going to be heavily involved in the passing game to make safe throws out of the backfield. And also, like Jeff said, tight end. I know he's a high-profile tight end, and he's highly touted, but tight ends historically don't do well in their first year. So, and it's a long history. It's not just a recent three or four history. It's a long history that tight ends do not do well. I think there's only two tight ends in the last 10 to 15 years that have really done anything in their first year. So, if I'm not mistaken. So, I know he's highly touted, and he may have a competition. There's a couple other tight ends in there that may give him a run for his money. And I'll go into that later when I talk about tight ends and in my fantasy positions in the coming weeks.
All right. Still didn't give a record. Not the one you did, but it's okay. I'm thinking, based upon the fact that they're heavy up top and somewhat weak on the bottom, they're going to be close to 8-8. I really think they'll be close to 8-8 this year. Because the back part of the schedule, I see him knocking off Chicago, actually surprising the Chargers. I think I said that one time. They'll split with Cincinnati as well. Of course, unless, because both these teams have quarterback problems, but if Oswald is there, he's going to try to put on a show versus Houston. That's going to be a very, very tough game, a very, very good game, in my opinion. Don't know if they'll win it or not, but I'm going to give it to them just because I don't believe in Savage. Only way I'll give that game.
Are you serious? Are you serious? Are you serious?
I gave you the
opportunity. You know what? I'm about to mute your ass. I can't believe that you went that way. I cannot believe you went that way.
Excuse me.
This is obvious bias. Obvious bias toward the Houston Texans.
My show, right?
Even the best, even the best teams come to Houston and have a hard, extremely hard time, if not lose. And you're going to say the Cleveland Browns are going to come to Houston and beat Houston? What?
Again, my show, my prediction. I gave you an opportunity to give yours.
I'll mute your ass. I'll mute your ass.
No, you will not. So, here we go.
You don't think so?
Both teams have quarterback problems. The deal is this. I believe Savage is worse than either Kaiser or Oswald. I don't think Oswald is going to be able to.
I can't. Jeff,
defend.
There's an obvious bias and it's coming out of his pores.
Oh my goodness.
Coming out of your pores in this. Oh, my God.
Will you be silent? I didn't talk during your analysis, did I?
Oh, my God.
So, again, I believe that Oswald is going to have a grudge, and he's going to play out of his mind if he's the starting quarterback in that game. I really think he will. At Houston at that, so I would give him that win as well. Again, I'm looking probably 7-9. Like you said, Jerry, a vast improvement from last year, but I think it's going to be even bigger than what you said. You said 3 or 4 games. I'm giving them maybe 4 or 5 game improvement because –
You said 8-8. Now, didn't they only win one game last year?
Listen, also
Didn't they only win one game last year? So
listen,
they're going to win 4 or 5 games this year.
Okay, you saying 4 or 5 games? That's great. I didn't question it. I didn't interrupt you, but of course you're not reciprocating.
When you come out like you did, it's ridiculous.
Listen, you have a bias for your team. I'm giving you an opinion. Just like you thought Osweiler was the man.
I don't have a bias, but I'm speaking
now,
the truth. When they come to Houston, even the best teams have a hard time winning in Houston. And you're going to say they're going to come and beat Houston because – Savage is worse than Osweiler and Kaiser?
I believe that Houston, and I told you, 13-3 at best. I already told you that. 3-13 at best. I already told you that. But I believe Cleveland.
Wow.
I believe Cleveland is going to be a way better team altogether. Again, last year. And I'm not talking about the South, but since you wanted to do that, no, I'm not even going to entertain you. You're not being entertained because I'm on the North.
Wow.
Back to the North. 2 more teams. So about to queue up some more music. And we're going to get to the Cincinnati Bengals, who I believe are going to have a very, very bad season, but it's going to be better than Cleveland and
Absolute
Baltimore.
Power. Corrupts. Absolutely.
I guess he's saying because I have absolute power, I'm corrupted. Anyway, let's get some music going as I talk about the Cincinnati Bengals.
Dearly beloved,
so we're going to
go ahead, crazy.
Quick. Let's go. I knew that's what you were short. Cincinnati Bengals, perspective brought to you by NFL Insider through Athlon Magazine. Sort out the backfield between Jeremy Hill, Giovanni Bernard, and Joe Mixon. Will any of these guys see enough touches to be worthy of starting as a running back one in fantasy? Turn that down. So, here's my thought before I even start reading this. Jeremy Hill might be traded before the season starts. I think Joe Mixon is that good. One of these two, Giovanni or Joe, is not going to be there because you don't go get Joe Mixon as high as they did with the baggage that he has to have him sitting on the bench. So Jeremy Hill, for all his warts the last two seasons, showed a knack for pushing the ball into the end zone. In the least, you could see the Bengals keeping him as a goal line back, even if Mixon unseats him as a starter. I don't see that. I see Giovanni Bernard, role staying the same as it has been in recent years. He'll be on the field on third downs and passing downs, finding ways to get 10 to 12 touches a game. I can agree with that. What do you predict for Andy Dalton in 2017? Last year's drop in TD passes can be credited to injury and adjustments with new coordinator Ken Zampezi. Those touchdown numbers look more like an outlier than the new normal for Dalton. He's proven that if you give him his weapons, he will find a way to manipulate defense to be productive. The Bengals did that. John Ross' quickness makes him a wizard in the red zone, and Tyler Boyd made strides in that area as the year went on as well. However, the return of a healthy Tyler Eifert will make the biggest difference. Eifert scored 13 TDs in 2015, all but two in the red zone. Which wide receiver finishes with more fantasy points in 2017, Boyd or Ross? Ross will end up with more dynamic as a more dynamic pro. The Bengals didn't use a top 10 pick on him for no reason. Yet, the team doesn't have a great history of easing rookies into the lineup. And they also re-signed Brandon LaFell to a 2-year deal, and that will take away some of the opportunity available. Tyler Boyd will be the starting slot receiver and should see a jump in production after a quality rookie year. By the end of the season, I think Ross will be averaging more fantasy points per game, but it might take him a while to get it going. Here's what I see. I'm going to be honest with you. A.J. Green, great player. As the article said, Tyler Eifert is the big difference for these teams, or for this team. A healthy Tyler Eifert means you're going to get the middle of the field clogged up, and A.J. Green one-on-one down the field. Ross has speed to burn and can make things happen. And he's a tall guy, so in the end zone, it's just not Eifert going up for jump balls or A.J. Green. The problem here is they're not set on their running back. And I know Giovanni's a change of pace guy, but Giovanni, towards the end of the season, he took over. He took over the starting job. And when he did that, that made it really difficult to do anything else. Jerry, go ahead.
Jerry?
Well, it's me? Oh, I thought he said
my
Jeff.
Turn. Oh.
Yeah,
oh.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Jerry. He said Jerry. Go ahead.
Oh, he did. Okay. Well, I like the offensive power of this team. I think the key, and I don't think it's the running game, I think the key to the Cincinnati Bengals, believe it or not, in my opinion, especially on the offensive side of the ball, if their tight end can stay healthy. Tyler Eifert seems like he's always nicked up and always something's going on with him, and he can't stay consistent on the field. And Andy Dalton needs that security in the middle of the field to be able to go to their athletic tight end to keep the pressure off of the outside receivers. John Ross is going to help. He can take a short pass in the middle and take it to the house because of his sure speed. And I think they're going to try to use him as much as possible to help alleviate the pressure or the coverage on A.J. Green, who's their big-time wide receiver. They got weapons. Don't get it twisted. Cincinnati had weapons on the offensive side of the ball. Their defense is decent enough. And with the fourth weakest schedule in the NFL this year, I just gave you the statistics about teams with a weak schedule and how often they go into the playoffs. And I think Cincinnati could absolutely do that and contend with the Pittsburgh Steelers for the division title. And without minimum, at least a wild card bid, if Pittsburgh runs away with it. But I do like Cincinnati, and I think they're probably going to be 9-7, 10-6, somewhere around there.
I can agree with you on that. I can. I think they're going to be upset in a couple games, though, which is going to be a reason why. Even though I think they're going to have a winning record, but I think, you know, even though Marvin Lewis has been there forever, and the ownership believes in him a little bit, I think this is going to be the cake, dude. I really do. I think it's going to be done for him. Jeff, real quick, your thoughts, real quick.
You know, Jerry's on the money about Tyler Eifert. He's like the poor man's Gronk, you know. Mixon is very good, but, you know, he might have to wait till maybe halfway through the season till he becomes the main back. And, you know, it's tough to be patient with that sort of thing, you know. You know, maybe the Bengals should have invested a high pick in a tight end instead of John Ross, which I think some fans are. Is that the name of the wide receiver they drafted? I mean,
yes.
It's tough to bank on a rookie wide receiver, but it does happen, and he'll be seeing a lot of single coverage across from A.J. Green. So you know, there's a lot of playmakers in Cincinnati.
All right. Well, we got about 15 minutes left in the show. And let's move on to the last team. But with the addition of their draft picks, you know, John Ross, Washington, he's 5'11", so he's somewhat of a speed burner. Joe Mixon being the big target. Josh Malone at 6'3", out of Tennessee, who I think is going to steal a little bit of that thunder. There's a chance, man. There's a chance for Cincinnati to do a lot better than what I'm predicting, but I don't think they are. I don't think they are. Moving on, let's get some music as we go to Pittsburgh.
And the fact is, I will be at that 9-14, that September 14th game in Cincinnati when they play my Texans.
Here we go. All right, okay. Are you going to be the good luck charm for your Texans when they lose
that
game?
I don't know, but I'll be in attendance to watch the game. And that could be a key game looking further down the road, closer toward the end of the season. So this could be a barometer on where these two teams are at. So.
Okay. Well, here we go. Cue me up some music to talk about the Pittsburgh Steelers. Any day now.
Music's on, man.
Oh, I couldn't hear you, but give me some Game of Thrones or something. Okay, here we go. Lemonade. All right. Again, this is inside information according to someone in Athlon Sports Magazine. Will the Steelers make a conscious effort to cut... Turn that down a little bit. To cut back on Le'Veon Bell's workload? Well, a lot of people, and this is before we get into the article, a lot of people think that that's going to happen because they don't want to hurt Le'Veon Bell because he's only played 16 games once, and he's injury-prone. But he's always a top running back. So they might just do that. The Steelers placed a franchise tag on Bell during the offseason. So while they've made a significant investment in him for this season, They have yet to attach themselves to him in the long term. While it might be a stretch to believe last season, it's a good bet that Pittsburgh will get the most out of him in his prime. Who emerges behind Antonio Brown as the Steelers' number two receiver? Now, Martavius Bryant got a little beef with Sammy Coates. We'll see what happens. But it's no-brainer. If Martavius Bryant can stay on the field, it'll be him. If he's not available, the answer just might be Bell if you're in a PPR league. Last season, Bell had six receptions or more in seven different games. He's the perfect security blanket for Ben Roethlisberger in a Steelers passing game that could have a wider distribution target in 2017. Can the Steelers' defensive special teams repeat its performance from last season? Pittsburgh was a somewhat surprising top 15 fantasy defense special team in 2016, even though it finished in the middle of the pack in most statistical categories. Lawrence Timmons is now in Miami, so that's a pretty big void that needs to be filled in the middle. But the Steelers have Ryan Shazier and hope for better health from Bud Dupree and early contributions from first-round pick T.J. Watt up front. Cameron Hayward missed more than half of the season, so he could be a difference maker as well. Pittsburgh also had a somewhat favorable schedule in that it faces several teams, Chicago, Houston, Minnesota, and Cleveland twice, with questions on offense. I wouldn't rush to draft the Steelers' defense, but I certainly could see this unit finishing among the top 15. Here's the deal. Pittsburgh is tied for the 27th strongest schedule, which means it has one of the weakest schedules. Pittsburgh is going to win this division anyway. It's just going to happen. The first part of this schedule is rather weak. The last, they have maybe two, in my opinion, they have maybe four or five tough games on this schedule. Four or five. And, you know, other than that, I don't think it's going to be that tough. T.J. Watt is a very, very good player. He's an outside linebacker. He's going to be like a defensive end hybrid for them. Juju Smith-Schuster, wide receiver, tall guy, 6'1", 215. So he's going to be fighting for time. They didn't draft him number two in their draft, meaning second round, but their first pick in the second round, for nothing. You know, the kid has the ability to be a great target for Ben Roethlisberger. Here's the thing. Pittsburgh is one play away from going to the Super Bowl, in my opinion. You know, or one play away from not making the playoffs. What I mean by that is Ben Roethlisberger makes one play, they go to the Super Bowl. Ben Roethlisberger's not in the quarterback position, they don't go to the Super Bowl. You saw that last year when Landry Jones came in and had to fill in for Ben Roethlisberger. That team is a totally different team without Ben Roethlisberger. Antonio Brown didn't get the looks he needed, so he didn't make the plays he needed. Martavis Bryant comes back, and again, if he can stay on the up and up and on the field, very, very potent tag team there. You know, Eli Rogers in there, Juju Smith-Schuster is a rookie, but he has ability too now. Don't forget that. Jesse James, you don't think of the tight end for Pittsburgh as a viable threat. You think of him as maybe a blocking guy and check down guy. At Ben's age and being hit, if they can't blow the top off the defense, he's going to look for James. He really is. You heard me say that Le'Veon Bell received 6 to 7 targets in more than, what, 7 games last year at the receiver position or catching the ball? 6 receptions or more, I should say, in 7 different games. So it's either going to be Le'Veon or it's going to be James. It's there for you to get. With that being said, I think they're going to go easily, you know, 11-5, possibly even 12-4, possibly. Their schedule is so weak. Even the insider said, when you play teams that have questions on offense and questionable offenses like Chicago, Houston, Minnesota, and Cleveland, and you play them twice, that's possibly 2, 4, 6, 8 wins. Possibly 8 wins. Possibly. I'm not going to give them 8 wins out of those 4 games, but I'll give – excuse me, I'm sorry. Chicago once, Houston once, Minnesota once, and Cleveland twice. So that's what? 5 games. 5 games that you could possibly write down as a win. So yeah, I can see 11-5, 12-4. I can easily see that. Real quick, Jeff and then Jerry.
Yeah, the Steelers have a lot of talent on offense, and they got the big play wide receiver back. Brown is a beast. Bell is amazing. Ben has some really big games, maybe not consistent. He misses a couple games. But the two things that this group has a history of, a fair amount of injuries and suspensions. And, you know, it's got to stay in the back of your mind. But that defense, you're right on the money, Vic. That defense is looking like a pretty good unit right now.
This is one of my sleeper defenses in the league this year. I think this defense is going to take a surprising leap. Mike Tomlin, it's going to put a stamp on it because I think he's got the weapons in place to play the type of defense that he wants to play now. And quite naturally, with the offensive weapons that they have, which is numerous, too numerous to talk about or have been talked about already, I see this team going I think they top out at 12 wins. I think they bottom out at 10.
Okay, so we're all somewhat in agreement around the same area. I think when you look at what's available to the Pittsburgh Steelers and if they can get their heads on right, this is going to be one heck of a team with a very easy schedule, in my opinion. But they'll win the North and represent well in the playoffs. Like I said, they're one player or play away from having a dominant team going to the championship, maybe even the Super Bowl. Quite honestly, I believe it'll come down to them and the Raiders if Big Ben stays healthy. And again, if David Carr stays healthy. The East, we'll talk about them next week. I've got some thoughts on that division. And, again, I'm not going to pick the Patriots to win it. I'm not. They're probably are, but I'm not going to pick them to win. But there's going to be a change of the guard, and it's coming soon.
Oh, wow.
So, with that being said, I want to thank everybody listening to the show. Jeff, thanks for coming on. Jerry, you've been difficult today. Why, I don't know, but it's okay. It's okay. But thank you all for listening to the program. We'll be back next week with a breakdown of the AFC East as we prepare to move to the NFC. As Jerry said earlier, he's going to break down his offensive players in the coming months. I'm going to break down the IDPs. Also, if you're looking for a fantasy football team to join or league to join for a little bit of cash, we can take it from you, make you shake your ass and watch yourself. Just drop us an email. I don't know. Jerry, you filled up your league yet?
No, I haven't. Jay Taylor at 342@comcast.net. It's jtaylor342@comcast.net. Drop me a line saying you're interested in a fantasy league. I'll share the link with you. You can see the settings and tell me if you're willing to join up.
All right. Along with my league as well, I have 2 of them. One on Yahoo, one on ESPN. Yahoo, all money's held by Yahoo. So if you don't pay, Yahoo automatically kicks you out. And then, hey, it's not my fault. No issues. Yahoo pays everything out as well. I think that's a good thing. It's about the same amount of money we play for every year, and the payout's about the same as we do every year. So pay up or get the step. ESPN is going to be held in league safe most likely, unless I find a suitable holding company for the money. League safe has not done me wrong thus far, but we'll see what happens. Got to fill up. Got to replace a couple owners. Some people haven't responded to me. Some people haven't, you know, done much of anything. So I'm looking to repeal and replace. That's what I'm looking at.
Oh, God.
So if you're down the clown and get beat down, email Jerry. Let him know you want the ESPN lead for me or Yahoo. That's Wolverines in the House or Neighborhood Street Ball. Anything you got, Jeff, before I let everybody go?
You know, I usually do the Thursday night show with Jerry, and Thursday was a big day for New York sports fans. I guess maybe we could, Jerry, you probably talked about it Thursday night, and I guess next time I'm on the air with you, we could talk about it. Real big day for New York sports fan with Phil Jackson finally being dismissed from the New York Knicks.
Oh,
Lord.
Here we go.
What did you say, Jeff?
He's about
what did you say?
I knew he was going to do it as soon as you said it, Jeff. As soon as you said it, I knew it was coming. That's what
he did
Thursday, Jeff. That's what he did Thursday.
Sorry, I had to miss it.
Every time I had to refer to him as the coach, as the general manager, anything but his name. So anyway, what will you be talking about tomorrow?
Tomorrow I'll be talking about the moves in the NBA, and also talking about some NFL football news relating to fantasy. I'm not going to go into fantasy positions, but talking about fantasy in general.
You know what? I missed promo. We were going to talk about the moves that happened in NBA. But, it's good you got it tomorrow morning because a couple big moves happened. People staying and one person going. We'll see what happens. So for me and my guys, I'd like to thank you all for listening to us. Tell you have a good rest of your Saturday. Enjoy that packed fight if you can. If not, catch it on SportsCenter. For me to you, I want to tell you, you've been listening to
Fantasy, Sports, and Politics.
Get ready to
run. You want to talk smack, you in the right place. So take a step back before I get all up in your face. I know you got your little views, you know I got mine. But there's like 50 other dudes holding on the phone line. Your voice will be heard, sir.
Next caller, please.
And if I don't concur, we can agree to disagree.
We're talking Fantasy.